Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. I'm Paula. As the speed of change accelerates all around us, it seems increasingly difficult to feel connected to our past. Our guest is the much-honored writer of best-selling histories, David McCullough. He's known to millions as biographer of John Adams and of Harry Truman. Mr. McCullough has spent a lifetime telling us about America on a grand scale, from presidents to floods to bridges. He's convinced history is relevant, and he's concerned that we are not teaching history to our young people. How does David McCullough suggest we revitalize the teaching of history?
You tell stories. That's the way you teach history. Very simple. History is the most interesting subject imaginable for this very basic reason that it's about people. It's about life. And why limit yourself in life to just knowing the experience of your own relatively brief time, your biological clock? History, among other things, is a source, as Adam said about poetry, a source of pleasure.
David McCullough grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where he was taught to love the performance arts. He then went on to Yale. Mr. McCullough won the Pulitzer Prize for his best-selling biography, Truman. He has received the Francis Parkman Prize and the Los Angeles Times Book Award. Twice he has won the National Book Award, once for history and once for biography. In addition to biographies, his other books include The Johnstown Flood and The Great Bridge. Bill Russell and I were delighted by the opportunity to welcome David McCullough and his distinguished friends, John Adams and Harry Truman. David McCullough, as I looked forward to this conversation, I was struck time and again at how audacious the concept of democracy is, that people can rule themselves. And not only the audacity of this idea, which we sort of take for granted, but how hard it is.
And how brave they were to attempt, first of all, to shake loose from the grip of Mother England against horrendous odds, with only about a third of the country in favor of the idea of a declaration of independence or a war, a third of the country timid, as Adams said, and a third absolutely against it.
Now, that's been forgotten.
Oh, it sure has. You know, if they'd taken a poll in the colonies,
they didn't know about polls.
They'd used focus groups. the whole thing.
We'd still be happy with the Queen.
Yeah, but you know, how many people are going to launch anything these days when only a third are interested?
Yeah.
And then I guess when I was working on the book, I was so struck one day by two statistics that they practically lifted me out of my chair. I suddenly was like one of those light bulb moments. I saw that the population of Philadelphia in 1776 was 30,000. That's all it was. By our standards, it was nothing.
Village.
Big town, small town. The British landed 32,000 troops on Staten Island. In other words, imagine your foe has just landed an army that's perfectly equipped, tough, experienced, ready to go, and there are more of them than the largest city in your country.
And Philadelphia was the queen city at that time.
The queen city, and it was only about a day and a half's march, or maybe 2 day march, from New York. In other words, they weren't just theoretically putting their heads in the noose when they signed the Declaration. They were, in fact, signing their death warrants. When they say we pledge our lives, our honor, our sacred fortune, that's not just mere rhetoric. That's the literal truth. And not to mention all the privation that others who aren't present at what we call Independence Hall, like Abigail Adams back at home trying to make do without her husband, trying to raise her children. No schools. Schools have been canceled because of the war. The war is at her doorstep. The New Englanders came to Philadelphia much more determined than any of the others because they'd been shot and killed. You know,
it was real for them.
The war was not an abstraction. It's too bad how many people today think that the Declaration of Independence is what started the war. that seem not to realize that we've been at war for a year, more than a year.
Well, and the, as you said early on, the courage. We were in Philadelphia a while back doing something, and I stumbled into, literally, I went to the hall where all this work went on. It was late in the afternoon, and the ranger, the Park Service ranger, was finishing up one of his lectures in the hall there. And somehow, just listening to it in that space, I had a sense of the incomparable bravery of these people. And you know, I've always thought of John Hancock as just a show-off. But what you know, the extraordinary and symbolic bravery of being the first to sign and doing it with a flourish, and is essentially his death warrant. And the courage in the face of that, and of course we grew up thinking, of course I would have been a patriot, I would have been there, I would have been, I don't know how many people would have had that kind of courage.
And you're inside a room, which the doors were locked and the windows closed, and the
in
it's
July.
Philadelphia in July, and you know what that's like.
And the AC wasn't working.
And the AC was definitely not working. Did you by any chance go next door to what's called Carpenter's Hall?
I went by,
well,
and I didn't go into
it. To me, it's so... so eloquent because it's so small. It's where the First Continental Congress met. It's just a little place, and you think, well, all that started in that space. It's a beautiful little building. And then the next time they came to town, they moved over to the State House because it was a larger space. But even it isn't very big.
Yeah. I think what's exciting about this is how both your book and just the tangible presence of it is how personal it is and how much it depended on those individuals.
We're going to come back and talk about a number of those individuals with David McCullough in just a moment. Please be with us when we return with the Paula Gordon Show.